The Back Row Super Show.
Here. All right, I'm Zach.
So we'll probably edit that down a little shorter there, because when I initially had it, it was backwards.
You messed up the introductions. I'm Zach.
I'm Richard.
Okay, great. So we're on episode 8. This week is Ginger Snaps, or Uh-Oh, I Got the Curse.
Or That's Why the Big Buddha Made Me.
So, I guess we'll talk about the actual show later. Or the actual movie later. And I guess first we can just do me time.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to pass the baton on to Zach here.
Okay. So I read a couple books, watched a couple movies. I guess first, book-wise, I picked up a copy of Michael Whitwer's Empire of Imagination. It's a fictionalized biography of Gary Gygax, one of the creators of D&D. It glosses over a lot of stuff that if you were a hardcore gamer nerd like I am, you'll know that it's leaving out large parts of the story that are largely unsavory and reflect badly on Gygax. One of the entire reasons that Advanced Dungeons and Dragons was changed to Advanced Dungeons and Dragons was so that he didn't have to pay royalties to the other creator of D&D named Dave Arneson.
That is just shitty.
Yeah, like, that's a really shitty thing to do. I mean, he got sued for it, and he lost. Like, they had to pay lots and lots and lots of money to Arneson because, yeah, like, they just went back on an agreement. But, by and large, it's fairly well written. I mean, it's adapted from a master's thesis that the author was working on. I think part of the reason that it kind of mischaracterizes Gygax a little bit and makes him sound better than he is if you look in the back, it's either taken from interviews or Not necessarily the other side of stories that happen, if that makes sense. So it's a lot of interviews with people that worked with him and were friends with him. So, of course, he sounds awesome.
Yeah, that's always weird to get a representation of that color.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun if you want to know a little bit about the history of one of the guys that created Dungeons & Dragons. Like, it's... By and large, it's accurate, but it leaves out a lot of stuff that I noticed because I know a little bit more of the history, but mm-hmm. You know, I also read, Sherry Priest's, Maplecroft. It's, I think, book one in a series that she's calling the Borden Dispatches.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you mention her before as an author?
I did. She wrote the Clockwork Century. Yeah. Those steampunk books. So mm-hmm. She does a lot of like speculative fiction. Mm-hmm. So Maplecroft is interesting. It's written in a style that I'm not aware of being used very often, called epistolary. Like, it's just journal entries and letters characters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The basic premise is it's Lizzie Borden and her sister, and there's this giant Lovecraftian plot that's going on in the background. Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah, it's Lovecraftian in nature. It's the weird thing about it is that it reframes Lizzie Borden's the murders that she committed with her parents, mm-hmm. or her father and stepmother, I guess. It reframes it in a way like kind of like an Evil Dead, where her parents were infected with this thing. So part of me thinks, oh wow, this is a really cool, interesting thing for a story. Another part of me thinks, well, that's kind of miscasting what happened.
Yeah. And
like, we're so far removed from it that it's like, oh, well, that's interesting and quaint and old timey. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you had someone write a book, say, about Jeffrey Dahmer and cast him as like, a reincarnation of a 16th century Catholic sin eater. I mean, that's kind of the same thing that they're doing here.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're misrepresenting horrible things that happened and capitalizing off of it. So part of me thinks it's really, really cool and interesting, and part of me is like, this is kind of the worst thing you could do to someone's legacy.
Yeah. I mean, you could even just like take the outlining story and just change the names, and that would that would make more sense, I think. Because even if I was like an ancestor of someone that lineage or something, and I knew my history and I heard about this narrative, it'd be like, this is disgusting. This is smut trash.
This is some bullshit right here. All in all, I mean, it's entertaining, especially if you like, you know, like I said, Lovecraft or Clark Ashton Smith or, you know, kind of turn of the century weird fiction.
So how does the epistolary style work out for like putting together a narrative? Does she like recount things that happened, or is it?
So a large section of it is made up of diary entries, kind of like Dracula was, from Lizzie Borden. A lot of you get a little bit more narrative with interactions between her and this professor that she's communicating with at Miskatonic University. So Sherry Priest just ripped that wholesale out of her whole cloth out of Lovecraft.
So is it really just like pure epistolary?
No, I mean, there's dialogue exchanges and stuff. There's stuff in there that wouldn't actually, no one would actually write a letter in these ways.
Okay.
But it's framed that way. And so it kind of puts you into the time period, because like epistolary novels were really popular in the late Victorian era. So, I mean, it's interesting. You can kind of see where certain characters start breaking down. Like, one of the characters who has long-term exposure to these like Cthulhu-esque horrors, right? He starts losing his mind, and so his dispatches start making less and less sense.
Yeah,
and like his language breaks down. It's an interesting read. It's not anything too deep there, but you know, it's fun.
I imagine that's kind of like would have been more popular around that period because everyone's like reading letters.
Yeah,
you know, that's the main way of getting things in. So that mode of thinking and analyzing information that's coming to you is very familiar to them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, whereas if like we read things on a letter base, it would just seem like a very unique kind of narrative, because it's not something we get every day. I mean, we text, but the actual crafting and putting of a letter is very different. It's like a very small short story, but it's personal and it involves like some kind of intimacy. You know, it's like if you read like a short story, but it was from someone you knew and they were talking about like their life.
Yeah.
So... Well,
I can't think of any books that I've been exposed to that are written like modern day epistolary novels, quote unquote, because no one can, other than Richard, can see me
air quoting
air quotes.
You can hear them. They make this sound
made up kind of like an epistolary novel, but in text format, like just, you know, emoji, OMG, alien head.
Wasn't there that horror movie that was about that, or there was something to do with like texting? It was that webcam one. I think that came out already. It was about
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's like these kids like sharing a webcam and they were like live streaming to each other, and then the horror movie was taking place through the webcams.
Oh.
Because of like a crime they had committed.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like against one of them, this girl like committed suicide, and so then she came back as like a Ringu thing, but it was like through the webcam. And then there's, of course, LiveJournal, which I'm sure you have fond memories of.
Oh no.
And then there's blogging, you know, which is like
I professional never had a LiveJournal.
Yeah. And that was like, I think, slightly the generation like right before mine, or what happened was the kids in my generation, they got started with it like in middle school.
Yeah.
And I didn't have like consistent internet till like high school.
Sure.
So like they came to it and their LiveJournal was like 2-3 years in deep. Like they had built like just a whole body of work.
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's for the large part people that are probably 5 years or so older than us that mainly used it. Well, maybe that's more true of like MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
But because like I never used LiveJournal. I thought it was ridiculous.
it's interesting, even to like.
I did use Blogger. Like, I'm not saying blogging is dumb, and it's kind of the same. But like a lot of the live journal things that are coming to mind is just like, just cringy.
Yeah, it was telenovela style recounting of young lives, which, you know, it's an expression, you know.
my parents grounded me for no reason other than that Jason drives a motorcycle and he's 46.
He has so many things to show me that aren't in his pants, Dad.
Oh, amazing. Oh, no, that's horrible. But so the as far as the movies go, I saw Spring Breakers, finally.
What is that one again?
It's the Harmony Korine movie that there was this big hoopla because, like, Selena Gomez was in
it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's college students who are overly entitled and just into all of the debauchery and hedonism of spring break. Like, there's this recurring phrase. You hear James Franco just like, spring break forever.
Oh, God.
Right? Like, he just keeps repeating it. He does a really good job as Alien. Just like a...
He's like, it's so weird watching stuff with James Franco because he's like one of those actors that I can simultaneously like and then dislike at the same time.
Yeah, it's really weird because, like, you're right. I can respect him as an actor and as a producer. Like, he's done some really interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, adapting I would think it would be unfilmable, Cormac McCarthy novel.
Mm-hmm.
Acting is like a rapper / criminal,
mm-hmm.
In this ridiculous movie that's so over the top. But then, you know, he does things like sex with 17-year-olds, mm-hmm. and yeah, like he's just kind of sleazy.
Yeah, the sex thing was weird because it was almost like, I don't know, it felt really self-aware, the way he was like talking about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is almost like performance art, like what you're doing here, especially like when he brought it on the public stage.
Yeah.
And he was like talking about it, like on talk shows and stuff like that, because people were making fun of him with it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I can't tell if maybe that was his point in doing it is just like, you know, I know people are going to be talking about it. I may as well address it or not lie about it, because like, so that level of honesty, I think, in one way is refreshing. And then in another way, it's just kind of like, so was it a publicity stunt?
It's weird. Yeah. It's that kind of weird.
Well, and you know, he's, if you look at his Wikipedia and read about him, at least like from a higher ed perspective, like he apparently did, there's a lot of question as to whether he is getting these advanced degrees. Cause like I think he's trying to get a PhD in like literature or something from Columbia University.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at his transcript, supposedly there's a lot of question being brought up whether or not he's just getting this degree because he's famous or if he's actually working, because he did, I think, like 60 some odd credits in one semester of PhD level work.
Mm-hmm.
Like 3 credit hours a semester translates to like 9 hours of work for that class, right? Like there's a rule of 3 with that. So he did, what, 189 hours a week of, come on, like, come on. That's not fair. Kind of ridiculous. But yeah.
It's funny. There was like pictures of him like in a class and he was just like sleeping. But it was like so comical. I was like, this is just weird, dude. Like, this is just really, really odd. Like, one, if you were going to go there and sleep in the class, like, you don't need to be there. You could just stand. So it's just, it's very odd to watch him. Also, I'm thinking back in my head and like replaying Spider-Man 1 and 2 with Sam Raimi. And I'm like, that was James Franco acting, but like bringing his acting direct from his soap opera experience. Because there's something really odd about the way he acts in that movie.
Yeah.
There's also something really odd about the way, what's his name that plays the Hobgoblin, Green Goblin?
Oh, Willem Dafoe?
Yeah, Willem Dafoe is also really odd in that movie.
He is.
But that's just kind of Dafoe-ish, sort of. But then watching him, like, he is very dramatic. Like when you see like Peter gets unveiled and he's like, Peter. And I'm like, and then you see like his eyes glossing up and I was like, wait, as we're talking about him, like that was him with his soap opera acting, just bringing it right into there. Cause he's like, this is what fits for this movie. And I was like, you know what, Franco, it does fit.
It does. No, I mean, he's a good actor. Don't get me wrong. He's just kind of a scumbag. But yeah, anyway, back to Spring Breakers. There's just this constant level of, there are constant amount of nihilism in the movie that just makes me go, fuck yeah. This movie is great. I wouldn't watch it over and over and over. Like, it's not a classic, but you know, I'd watch it another couple times, maybe if you have another bad movie night.
What was that? That bad that what was it called? It was I'm trying to remember his name. I'll probably try to edit this little section out. But he was in. The Johnny Cash biopic with James Mangold. What's his name again?
Oh, Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
He did this other movie that it was like, it wasn't Sunset something, but it was just.
I'm Still Here?
No, it wasn't I'm Still Here. Oh, okay. It was after that. And he plays a detective.
Oh, Inherent Vice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was watching that again.
I've never seen it, but I read the book it's based on. Any good?
The movie is odd.
It's P.T. Anderson, so.
Yeah, it felt a lot like P.T. Anderson's version of, you know, The Big Lebowski, basically. Kind of felt like that. It wasn't as good. It's not as good.
Oh,
The Big Lebowski is a whole different genre thing, but there is that kind of like humor there that's trying to like set up a situation where like you see like, you know, a comedy of like errors and like things happening there.
Sure.
And there's that moment in The Big Lebowski where the dude is coming up and he meets like this private eye who's like hanging outside of his apartment. He's like, "What are you doing here?" And he's like, "Oh," the private eye's like, "Oh, I really respect, you know, your skill and stuff like there. I see what you're doing here. You know, maybe we could trade some information." And then it's funny to watch Inherent Vice because like that guy's actually is supposed to be like an investigator, like private eye. Inherent Vice was just kind of odd. It just kind of reminded me of that kind of like off center kind of vibe when you were talking about it there.
Yeah, no, it's if they shot the movie like the book it's based on, I can see it being pretty interesting. Cause I mean, Inherent Vice and Big Lebowski are both basically, Maltese Falcon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like they're all going to play similarly. I just like Inherent Vice, the book is just like this drug smeared like late 60s early 70s time. I think it's in Florida if I remember right. I read it a few years ago. But yeah, I could see that being interesting.
It was a movie that I kept on waiting for it to like start, and it was like, and then it, I think it's one of those movies you kind of build up like in reflection afterwards. It's like, oh, okay. I guess that's what they were trying to do there.
Yeah.
Interesting movie.
I mean, that's P.T. Anderson movies in general, I think, though, if I'm being honest. Because, I mean, well, Boogie Nights is good.
Mm-hmm.
Magnolia feels like the same thing. It's just like, okay, when is... What's... Okay. So they just interact? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Sit there.
Cool.
This is going to be important later, I think, maybe.
Yeah, I'll just, okay. Oh, and it's raining frogs, because fuck me, right? Like,
exactly.
I also watched Victor Frankenstein. It's the movie where James McAvoy is playing Victor Frankenstein, and Daniel Radcliffe is... Igor.
You sat and watched that movie? Really?
Yeah.
How was it?
So I fell asleep for the past, like, the last, like, 10 minutes or so of the movie. And I'll bring this up in a second when I discuss the last thing. It's, it feels like Daniel Radcliffe has just made his level or his amount of fuck you money from Harry Potter. And so he's just doing these increasingly weird roles.
Mm-hmm.
So Victor Frankenstein's interesting in that it's set in the wrong time period, first of all, and they never really address it in the movie. I mean, because why would they? But, you know, like Frankenstein is supposed to be late 1700s, early 1800s, And this is like right around the turn of the century, like hardcore Victorian England steamworks and coal and all that. Like, I find that an odd setting of it, but I like the story of Frankenstein. Their reveal with what the monster is kind of anticlimactic because you see it halfway through and then they bring it back at the end and it's just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess they'll fight it now because it's a Hollywood movie. Like, I didn't even know that this movie existed until I was going around the shelves at the library and I was just like, what is it? It's got James McAvoy in it and Daniel Radcliffe and it came out like 2 years ago. Like, why did I never hear about this movie?
We saw the trailer for that, I think, online. And Hannah was like, oh, that looks kind of neat-ish. And then it's kind of one of those things, especially with, I mean, I'm sad to say how susceptible to it we are, but the amount of marketing for it wasn't like super crazy.
Yeah.
So it doesn't like stay within like your conscious mind to like, oh, that's a thing. Like, you can't forget right now that, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is out right now.
No.
You know, it just came out today. You know, dating this podcast. Just came out today.
May 5th.
Yeah, Fast and Furious came out like about 2 weeks ago, I'd say. And you know that's in theaters.
Yeah.
But a movie like that, it's like you see one trailer during a movie or during some watching of TV, and if you don't pin that and like make that like on your schedule to like go see that movie, like it just really grasps you, you're not going to get to it. You know? Yeah,
or do what I do and make little sticky notes of like, this is when this comes out, I gotta go see it.
Exactly. You need that level of organization.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it was different and interesting. I mean, like, Igor. So my wife and I, whenever we see the name Igor because of Young Frankenstein, we say Igor. So it it's thrown me off for the rest of my life. But the thing, sorry for that, podcast listeners. The thing with Igor in the movie is that he starts out as this kind of self-taught physician who is working in a freak show.
What?
Yeah, like apparently reading books means that you can repair aortal like things done with your heart. Just by feel, like you can move bones around. Like, basically, he's uber smart, right? And he's just taught himself how to be a physician. But he's a hunchback. And so Daniel Radcliffe walked around for a good 20, 30 minutes of the movie as a hunchback and, like, you know, on the balls of his feet and stuff until Frankenstein finds him and goes, oh, you're not actually a hunchback. You've just got a gigantic cyst on your back. And he, like, attacks him and brutally heals him. Like, he has to teach him how to walk because he has to reform his spine. And so he's got this like Victorian girdle almost that's keeping him straight after he pulls all this fluid out of
him. Rips the cyst out of him?
Well, like, so he takes like a big large gauge, like brass needle looking thing and like plunges it in his back and just pumps this goop out of it. And then just like, it's horrific. Like, it's probably the most horrific thing that happens in the movie, but it's I wouldn't call it fun or entertain. It's interesting to watch. It's another one for the bad movie list. Yeah.
No, Swiss Army Man. I keep on saying, we got to get you guys to watch that.
Oh, that was the next one I was going to talk about, actually.
Did you watch it already?
Yeah, we watched it.
Yes! Yeah. I wish I was there, though. That movie's amazing!
Yes! So you guys have seen it.
Yes, we saw it in theaters.
Good, I can talk about it. So, Amazon Prime, for free.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love the unreliable narrator, like... Mm-hmm. thing whenever movies tend not to use it, but it's mainly books. Paul Dano as the unreliable narrator in this is fantastic. Daniel Radcliffe again has some level of fuck you money because he plays a talking farting corpse. Like,
so good.
It's so good. It's so and like the ending where he's just like farting his way into the ocean, like, that's That's hilarious.
Yeah. It's hilarious absurdism / unreliable narrator, yeah. But with like a really big heart in the story too.
Yeah.
Like
the magical realism in it. Like yeah. he's not been shipwrecked. He's just been living in the woods behind this house forever, which I guess we didn't do it at the beginning of this one. There's going to be spoilers left and right. Grow up and deal with it.
It's a great movie. Yet even after seeing it, I would just watch it again because it's just great. And it's Paul Dano is really good at projecting this sort of vulnerability as an actor, and that comes across. And also, so you're able to build a lot of empathy with him, like on the screen, which is sometimes hard to engage with someone, you know, screen wise. And then Radcliffe kind of just comes in and, is just willing to use himself as this prop to just, like, communicate the story. And there are some movies where you get that magical realism and they try, like, the director tries to come in it, everybody tries to perform, they commit to it, but it just falls flat.
Sure.
Because it doesn't, the actual humanity of the story they're trying to communicate or their message, it gets kind of obscured by the magical realism, and then you're like, I can't believe this. Like, I can't get invested in this.
Right, right. Well, like, I think this movie balanced it really, really well. Like, I think it's amazing that they have Daniel Radcliffe and they spend the first, I don't think he says anything for the first, like, half hour of the movie.
It's a good bit.
Like, and like, it was to the point that I turned to my wife when we were watching it and I was like, I thought that Daniel Radcliffe had lines. Is he really just going to play a corpse? It's just being abused the entire time. Like,
so good.
Like, what is going on with this movie? but it's fantastic. It's so well shot. It's very well scripted. Like, I can't remember if the directors had any hand in the writing or cinematography of it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did because everything is gelled so tightly.
Yeah.
It had two directors, so I think that it's the Daniels. Both of them are named Daniel, and so they're credited as the Daniels.
Which are with the Russo brothers and stuff, and after watching them do the Winter Soldier so well, I was like, maybe two directors just the way to go.
Well, especially like, with it seems to work on small budget and really large budget.
Really, large budget is like, it obviously has to help because that's way too much.
Yeah. I mean, Joss Whedon went crazy doing that. God, I feel like everything I talk about either goes back to Marvel or Star Wars.
It's part of cinema. You know, it's part of the environment.
Yeah.
But Swiss Army Man was such a joy because it was one of those things that, you just walked in. Nobody was hyped up about that movie. There's nothing really about it other than the weird trailer.
Yeah.
And then you sit and you watch and you're just genuinely surprised.
Yeah.
Which is impossible. Next to impossible to happen in cinema. Even with good films or with enjoyable films. Like I've seen maybe three or four cuts of the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer to now. So like you get so much of it like beforehand. And to show up in a movie and it's just a very natural kind of cinematic experience. It's like you went to the Blockbuster or you found a movie on the shelf and you just like stuck it in there.
Yep.
You had no idea what you're getting into. And then you're like, oh, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Well, and that's, my wife hates trailers, even though I love trailers. I love seeing what is being packed away in the movie.
Yeah. My wife will just sit and watch trailers. Literally for hours.
Yeah. Which I do the same thing sometimes when I'm bored at work. Like I'll just pull up YouTube and go trailers. And then, cut out all of the things that talk about Winnebagos and stuff. but no, like my wife hates watching trailers because she's just like, it's going to spoil something in the movie.
They do a lot now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they always have because if you watch trailers from way before the internet, so like from the 70s and 80s, like they just tell you the movie.
Yeah.
Just straight, like they just, look, here's Michael Myers. He's her brother. He's killing everyone. Yeah. Does he die? It's like, well, why watch this movie? You summed it up in like 3 minutes. Like, what are you?
It's kind of funny because I feel like back then, like the dialogue narration was revealing, but the actual like scenes and stuff, like when you were talking about that other movie, the one with the robots in it in the mall.
Oh, Chopping Mall.
Yeah, and you made a comment about like that didn't actually happen in the movie.
Yeah,
like, they didn't break into the mall. They worked there.
Yeah, they worked there.
So it was just like some guy just like, man, I'm gonna change that. They broke into the mall. That sounds better.
Yeah.
So I feel like you had less of the constructed plot like from the movie.
Yeah,
and it was more just like some kind of summation. Like, but they weren't. You weren't gonna see like the. Like in a Halloween trailer, like let's say the first one, you'll get that whole dialogue and stuff narration, but you won't get like the coolest scene in the movie or like the full effect of the scene where she's like hanging around in the clothing lines and the clothes are there. Where that would be a scene in the trailer. Now they would put that in there, you know, or something similar to like that.
Oh, one sure,
like a really iconic shot. So you wouldn't be surprised when you saw it.
Yeah.
So.
And then I guess the last thing is, my wife and I went to a break room.
Oh yeah.
Ever been to a break room?
I saw that. I've seen them. I saw them years ago and then I saw your wife in pictures and I was like, she obviously wants to just destroy everything.
Oh, so it's great. I think there was a Groupon deal. I still need to pay the person back who booked it, for us, but I want to say for like six people, it was only like 80 or 90 bucks.
Yeah.
Granted, it was only 15 minutes, which the 15 minutes fly by, but, but I mean, that gets you 52 items per room, to break.
I don't know why there wasn't a picture of you in a helmet.
Oh, I was in a separate,
separate
room. Basically,
you weren't taking any selfies with yourself?
Girls, guys.
Oh, okay.
So, the person who booked it, I was in the same room as her boyfriend. And so, like we were just looking at the stuff because I want to know where they source their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be estate sales and stuff because there were some sad, sad stories and the things that we were pulling out. So he bends over and he comes up with this coffee mug and he's like, huh, South Dakota Tribal Academy. How the fuck did that get in there? Oh, well, let's throw it at the wall.
Yeah.
Right. And then another time, like he pulls up this bowl or saucer or plate or something and like he flipped it over and he's just like, this is the most heartbreaking thing ever. It's like, I love you forever, mommy or whatever on it. And it's just like, yeah, that sucks. Hey, frisbee it at the wall. Like, but no, like the first couple of things you break, like you have to, or at least I did, I had to like rewire the way I felt about breaking things because I was like kind of overhand pitching saucers and stuff at the wall. Like, oh, I'm not supposed to do this. I'm supposed to break. Oh God. Oh God. But, I found out the most difficult things to break are wine bottles.
Yeah.
Dude, I took a wine bottle by the neck and hurled it at the wall, a good 15 feet or so across from me.
Mm-hmm.
It goes thunk, thunk and hits the ground and didn't break.
Yeah. I mean, so I have you like, never bludgeoned anyone to death with a wine bottle? No,
I haven't. Oh, well, I set it up on an ottoman though and swung a baseball bat at it. Oh, and that's the other thing. They have, things lining the walls for you to use. So they have like a crowbar, they have baseball bats, and like a sledgehammer. I love the sledgehammer. It's just like I had it in one hand and I was just like, smashing.
Yeah, this place just doubles as like a sex dungeon, basically. I love the sledgehammer.
Well, maybe some people. but they have these, you know, they have someone giving you the rules and policies of like, don't hit each other with baseball bats. Be cognizant of where other people are because you don't want to get clock them in the head with a crowbar.
Seriously, yeah.
And your field of view isn't great because like you have, well, because I have glasses, like I had to have one of those plastic visors and then a helmet on top. But they're like, they're basically motorcycle helmets with ponchos and gloves. Like you feel like you're going into the Purge. But the way the instructor...
Still haven't watched those movies, but yeah.
I haven't either. But the way the instructor was talking about, like, there's a punching bag hanging in one of the corners. And they're like, yeah, you can hit this with just the baseball bat. Supposedly it feels like you're hitting a real person. And I was like, wait, how would you know what it feels like to hit someone with a baseball bat? Like, who has come through here and told you that? Yeah. No, it's fun. I highly recommend it. For $50 more, you can break, old computer monitors and stuff. TVs, I think projection TVs or something that you can just bust up.
All the lead and shit just flying everywhere.
Yeah, right.
Like cadmium, the mercury... Need a little more polonium.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
But yeah, so that was my me. What about you?
I'd say it was a pretty good combo, me. Some give or take there. Yeah, I watched Fast 8. That was pretty good. The last Fast movie I really, really enjoyed was Fast 5 with the giant giant safes that they were dragging through the streets of Brazil. And there was a lot of kind of like, oh, wow, awesome kind of set pieces in this one as well.
Sure.
Like there's a scene in the trailer, so I'm not spoiling anything from the trailer because this movie is just like pretty fresh. Scene in the trailer where these cars are just being taken over by, she calls them zero-day exploits, which is a thing, but... Not really with cars, but you can hack into cars and drive them. Like, it's a thing now. Like, anything that has any kind of, like...
Guidance.
Automated steering.
Yeah.
It'd be easier now with the way that they have them set up with, like, the back and rear camera, so you could even, like, see where you're going now. like, while in the car. But, I mean, that was a couple years back. Like, people were able to drive... things around, just kind of hacking into it the same way you would, you'd get like an ATM machine to dispense on command, a lot of cash, because a lot of them are set up with.
Yeah. But that's again, not a 0-day exploit.
Yeah. Right? Not really. It's just like a 0-day would be like, it comes out. And as soon as it comes out, like you have an exploit available to it that hasn't been patched yet.
Sure.
That's the idea of a 0-day exploit. Not really applicable with cars, honestly, because they aren't going to be patched because you know where you can get that update for your firmware or any kind of operating system in your car. Like you're not downloading that from the internet and then sticking USB in your car unless that becomes like a feature that's commonly available. But it's still a very odd concept for people to be like, yes, I'm going to stick my USB dongle in my computer. I'm going to download new firmware. Then I'm going to stick this damn thing into my Jeep Grand Cherokee. So you're basically just going to like screw your Jeep Grand Cherokee with this USB dongle and then download a new OS. That's still just like people would be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like you actually expect me to do that? So a lot of firmware updates and stuff would happen like at your dealership and stuff like that through an automated service thing. But even then, like it's not a big thing now. It will eventually become a thing once things are more integrated. Maybe you turn on your car one day and there's like a big... Once they're more connected, like consistently, and you turn in your car and the person, you get some malware coming up that says like PayPal $1,000 to this email address, or you're not going to be able to drive to work, And you're just going to be like, Tits McGee just sitting right there, not being able to do anything about it. Literally nothing. Because while there is a side that is devoted for security with a lot of these firms integrating technology.
Sure.
The number one thing is just getting it there, like getting it to work and selling it as a feature. Security is going to be an afterthought, but security is, especially within the digital world, one of those things you really only worry about or think about once you've already been hacked and exploited.
Sure.
Like you'll have, congressmen who just have like password in like lowercase for their accounts and stuff like that. And then they get hacked and they're like, I thought it was secure. Who's going to think about that? I made the second S into a Z. You know, so security is just a silly is a silly thing in practice with the way that, you know, people have it.
I guess I should change all my passwords.
Yeah, yeah. Just add the Z, man.
Just add words.
Z right at the end. So, anyways, so she's driving through with these cars, and they're all just like hijacked and moving around, and you see them move, and it's like World War Z, you know, where like the zombies are just kind of like pounding and moving around and like squirming, you know, with the Brad Pitt movie. Except it looks better because they're not just like these stupid, ugly polygons just like flopping around. Look like, instead of people, they look like tentacle things in World War Z. They're just like these tentacled things crawling on top of each other with like the lowest polygon count possible. It's like PlayStation 2 level graphics. So anyways, the cars are moving in this, and it looks like that, but it looks impressive. You're like, holy shit, you see all these cars turn the corner, and like you see them all coming at you, and you're like, yeah, that would fuck you up. That would totally fuck your shit up. So there's a lot of great set pieces in the movie like that.
Okay.
So it's definitely a good popcorn flick.
Lots of good eye candy with new cars.
New cars, but mostly just like they'll take the cool cars and just do cool stuff with it. Jason Statham and Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, have a good scene in jail where they're like fighting, and you want that scene to last longer because it's ridiculous. But Jason Statham's great, and I'm not going to ruin a scene that he has on the plane later on, but it's pretty adorable. That's all I'm going to say about that. And what else? I'm looking to get into a new car. We'll see about that, though.
Oh, you are? I thought you just got the...
I got the Fiesta's 2013. And it's not that old.
Oh, it's been 4 years, so you got to upgrade?
No, see, the thing is, like, my first car was, like, taken away from me when it, like, got smashed.
Yeah.
And so I got totaled.
Okay.
Because this lady in this Mercedes hit my Yaris, and Mercedes versus Yaris, one of those cars is going to win. So my frame got bent, and she had, like, one of her headlights was out.
Yeah.
So she just, like, right turned into me. You know, I didn't die or anything. It's just the frame got bent up. And so I had about a week where I was like without a car, and then I was having my wife drive me, and I was like, I need to get something. So like for a week straight, I was just like looking up cars, going whatever, and then eventually I got to a dealership, and I was just like, yep, let's get that one. Let's just do it. And it was cheap and affordable, and I was able to get it, and it was a done deal.
Yeah.
So... But I've never really been like 100% satisfied with it.
My wife has the next biggest car, a Focus, and I'm not satisfied with that car. So I guess I can see your,
And it's odd because the car has done fine. I only have like 25,000 miles on it. I only work a couple days out of the month, like 14 total.
Yeah.
With my switch shifts. They're 12-hour shifts. So it's good in that respect, but I wanted to get a car that I could just like keep forever till it just like died, till it was like 200,000 plus, something like that, super reliable.
You're not going to get a Toyota or a Honda, are you?
I think I might. What?
Why?
What else am I supposed to get? Like a GMC?
No, I just... Toyotas are so bland.
There's nothing exciting about the Fiesta.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, all 120 horses of it. You know, the Honda Fit has 130, and it's a smaller car, so it's a little zippier. But
But if you ever like get any body damage, it will just get fucked.
No, it's got
the way they're set up.
No, it's got good crash test ratings.
Well, but, yeah, because of crumple zones.
Yeah,
which just means the plastic breaks very easily and absorbs a lot of the.
Yeah, friction. It's gonna like take it all in there.
Yeah, but it means your car's total.
That's fine. I made more on my total than I paid for the car when I totaled my Yaris. Well,
fair enough.
Because I drove it so little amount.
Yeah.
And those tiny little cars are just like, yeah, we'll just total that. We'll just ship it to Russia. You know, someone's going to grab this.
Someone will drive it.
Someone's going to like just put some duct tape on that bent frame right there.
You'll be good.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, we're just going to hit like Caribou up there or something. So,
anyway, sorry, I keep cutting you off.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, I was looking into like a Honda Fit or something, which they're a little less ugly now. They're still kind of ugly, but, we'll see. It was either that or like another Yaris, but I drive my wife's Yaris and I don't know. It only has like 106 horsepower and it's fine. Like you can drive it on the interstate. If you're trying to drive like your Pac-Man trying to escape the ghosts, then no, you're not going to have fun with that. You know, you need a little more ponies for if you want to do that. If you're the kind that's like, oh man, that freaking Mustang like cut ahead of me, I'm going to cut his ass off. No, you're not cutting him off. You're not cutting off that
Mustang.
No, not if he's actually driving. Have
you
thought driving.
About a Mustang? You guys don't have kids. So, no. I mean, you don't need a practical car.
No, everybody knows you got a Mustang. It just has a headache. It's like performance, but using like economy parts, especially for like the lower
enough.
End.
That's fair
like,
enough.
You get the horses, like the thing runs, but you know, it's not a Corvette. It's not like a fiberglass frame, you know, this highly tuned engine thing.
Yeah.
I mean, once you get to like the Shelbys and stuff, like you're a little better. Like, you know, you get closer to like 70,000.
You know, I've always wanted one of those, but we were taking
hot.
Her car to the dealership and they have a the GT, I think it's a 350.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, wow, this looks awesome. $58,000. Nope. Don't have the money for that.
Yeah. It's like $500 a month in payments at least.
Yeah.
Probably more than that. So yeah, you know, those are sexy cars. But to get that in like a $30,000 car.
Yeah.
Like that low performance. Yeah. You're going to have some issues with such and such or other things going out. So usually guys that get cars like that, they like the repair aspect of it, like, I'll just replace my alternator and stuff. I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
If I'm going to get, like, a sports car, it's going to be where my life is at the point where I pay somebody else to maintain that thing. Or I'm, like, maintaining the thing.
So, listeners, send us money.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
Lots and lots of money. And a Honda Fit in whatever color. I'll take that. That doesn't matter. I saw a yellow one that was, like, 2016, but it was, like, a little cheaper. But it was like bright neon yellow. I was like, I don't know about that. There's a blue one. Let me look at the blue one. And so, yeah, I've kind of, I really liked that the hatchback that I had with the Yaris.
Yeah.
And then this is just a sedan, which is fine. It's got plenty of room. Honestly, there's no complaints I have with that car other than like I don't know how long it'll last because the transmission's a little weird in those. It's like, it's like a manual. I don't know if her Focus is the same way. It's like a manual transmission that's been automated. So it's like two gearboxes, like split into two. And so it acts like a manual. And that like if you're going up a hill and like you don't catch it, it'll like roll back. And you got to give it gas to get it to like shift up. So it's like a manual that like a computer is basically shifting the gears for you.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's more...
Yeah, the Focus isn't like that. My problem is that the it's one of those like I forget what they're called. It's basically timed ignition where like if you're at a stoplight, it's a four-cylinder car, only two cylinders are being used, and then when you go, all four fire. And it saves you a lot of gas. What this means though is that the car lurches like a son of a bitch. And so you're trying to accelerate and it's just like, come on, speed up to get to 30 miles an hour. And that's irritating.
Yeah.
I mean, I drive a crossover SUV with a six cylinder engine. So
yeah,
I've said before, if the next car I get, it is going to have steel body and at least six cylinders. That's all I want. That's all I care about. I want to be able to go when I hit the throttle.
Yeah. There's a different kind of level there. Because me, I'm just like, yeah, this thing will respond once I get above 40 and then things are going with the RPM. So, yeah, that's about it. I think that's good enough for me time there.
Are you sure?
Yeah, yeah. I'm taking some piano lessons. So we'll see if that has any implications on our activities. Maybe do some compositional stuff. We'll make it a surprise. We'll see what happens. Yeah, that's good. And ginger snaps.
Okay, ginger snaps.
Right into it.
All right. So, it occurred to me last night that I have not seen ginger snaps in many, many years. Mm-hmm. I thought I could just come into this and just be like, yeah, talk about ginger snaps. But my wife, when she found out we were recording today, she goes, oh, what are you recording on? And I go, ginger snaps. And she goes, oh, yeah, I like that movie. What are you guys going to talk about? And I go, I don't know. Let me watch it. Let me watch it.
In your head, you were like, werewolf girls? Yeah.
Werewolf girls? Hot redhead? Yeah.
I like the brunette myself, but okay.
Yeah, no, I like this movie. It's got interesting commentary on puberty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the central takeaway for the movie, is that puberty, especially for women, sucks.
Yeah. It sucks there, and then siblings. I think siblings would be like a second kind of addition in there, and like growing up with a sibling, growing through with that change, being kind of separated from them again through that whole puberty development, because then you're at two different stages in your life.
Well, sure. And yeah, like I don't have a sister, so I don't know what it's like growing up in a household with a female going through puberty. So that part may have been lost on me.
A little bit. Just think of it as like a wife situation, because I have four of them, except...
Four sisters, not wives.
No, I have four wives as well. That's what I'm accustomed to. And so, again, actually, I meant that, what I said. It's like living with four wives.
Okay.
Okay. Or even just one. Let's like say you had a sister, except you can't hit on them. You guys probably don't share any interests. It's like a loved one... Like in a relationship, it's like when you're arguing with your wife now, except that's all you do with your sibling. Neither of you know what the word compromise means.
Because fuck that.
Yeah. You do love each other. You do. But you're not macking on them. So there's no benefit for working on that love continuously. It's just this begrudging love that you have for this person. And so it's like that. Let me just translate that experience.
Fair enough.
And you share all the same intimacies in life.
Yeah.
Other than getting naked with each other.
Yeah. I mean,
unless that's your family, which I'm not going to talk about that in this podcast, but you share all those same intimacies with them, you know, living in that close quarters. You know, who ate this? Who did this? Did you forget to do this? Dealing with family. You do that as well together, and like the intricacies of that, except it's the same family.
Yeah.
Because you're both in the same one. Yeah. So it's a lot like that. It's like being in a relationship, you know, with your wife, stuff, whatever, without any of those other benefits.
Oh, okay.
But just the hardships and that hard fought love.
Yeah. It's comes making through. Me glad I have a brother.
It's different.
Yeah. So, speaking of intimacy and having to be kind of pried away from each other, the sisters in this are like super, super into each other.
Yeah, they're super close.
There's
even that one really odd scene at the end where Ginger is talking to Bridget. Ginger, for you guys, if you don't haven't watched the movie, is the hot redhead, and Bridget is the mousy brunette with like stereotypical witch hair, like when you see like witches and like caricatures and their hair's like sticking out on the side, that's Bridget.
Yeah, it does that the entire movie. It's like she's got fans behind her on her costume just blowing her hair forward.
Yeah, it's like the bedhead product mixed with a little bit of hairspray, and it's just like this floating cap around her head. It's like a cape, basically.
Yeah.
Like a kind of cape hangs, except just around her head. But there's that funny scene where Ginger's talking to Bridget, and she's like fully transformed almost into this werewolf. And she's like, it's almost like we're not even related now. And Bridget's like, oh, God, no. She's like, get the fuck away from me, which is pretty great. So then, you know, touching on the intimacy thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I mean, you know, it's two sister. Well, Bridget, I think, is willing to do anything. Like, I think the mom even comments on it.
Mm-hmm.
She's always just done whatever her sister wants her to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's that scene at the end where Wolf Ginger, who is just thoroughly not human anymore, is lapping up blood. And so, you know, Bridget is trying to lap up blood as a human and she's not quite doing it and vomits it up. And then, yeah, it devolves into the ending from there. I think I was talking with you earlier. I really like the makeup and cost in the special effects in this movie, especially since it was such a low budget movie. Like in that scene, I pointed out, it looks like they have Bridget in like this pancake foundation makeup so mm-hmm. that the red just really pops on her face when she's like cupping it into her mouth.
Mm-hmm. Gross.
Yeah. Super gross.
Yeah. So there's a lot of great scenes in this movie. It's definitely one, if you haven't watched before, it is, I'd say it's above like typical B horror movie stuff.
Yeah.
It definitely has good shots and good cinematography, and the initial introduction credit scene, when they're going through like their depictions of like suicide.
Yeah.
And you're kind of, cause they're kind of talking about it and you're like, okay, what are they really talking about here? Like, cause they're, she obviously comes in there, Bridget's character, talking, you know, from experience from coming inside. And then Ginger's like, kind of like faux, like slitting her wrists. And then she's like, you know, that's stupid. I'll just, you know, cut my throat,
Cutting your wrists for girls.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she says, yeah, for like, for girls or for pussies or something like that.
Or yeah, for pussies or something like
that. And so then you have that, and then she's talking about, I'm going to cut my throat, and then they talk about the pact thing, which comes up a lot. Some kind of pact they made for when they were 8 to, like, either die together, you know, by the time they're 16, or just, like, what is it? Out by 16, but dead in the scene, but together forever. It's kind of the quote there that she has. And then they cut through, like, this still image / video presentation that apparently they're making for a class. For what reason? I don't know.
Class they're in. Yeah. It didn't seem like an art class.
It's definitely like a photography assignment, though. Like, it's something to do with like making some kind of presentation.
Is it, though? I like to think that they were supposed to have a presentation, and instead it was just a bunch of pictures of them being dead.
Well, you know, he has the projector set up.
Yeah.
So imagine other people had some kind of presentation they were setting up. But it's not clear exactly what, even regardless of what it was, this would never fit.
No.
And so they have the presentation, and that is just like such a well-shot intro.
Yeah.
And like with all the different deaths, and there's a lot of them where you're still getting the vibe that, you know, how close these two are, because a lot of the deaths, they're just like, they're together. They're murdered in some fashion right next to each other, or they committed like suicide, like it was some kind of religious pact or something.
Yeah.
And
the shot of them at the like little playhouse, like mm-hmm. keeled over with bleach on the table at their tea party. Like that was a favorite.
Yeah. There's like bleach and I think like a bottle of Pine Sol or something there too. And they just like lap it up. And that was great. And right before that, they talk about like, oh, you should hang, you know, you should really hang. And so then you see like within the presentation, like an image of Bridget hanging.
Yeah.
And she's like swinging and stuff there. And it's just so.
Well, you hear one of the students go, how did they do that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so macabre, beautiful.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, weirdos like me, we just love that stuff. You know, I don't want to see a snuff film, but if you want to artfully present like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And especially, I mean, they're both really attractive young ladies. And, so that's just like, that adds to the visual to it. Like there's some really cool scene. There's the one scene where Ginger's character has like the little X over her eyes. And it's just like black tape.
Yeah.
And she's just like all crawled out and like dead in like bathroom. And then the sign above it, I was looking at the sign. It says no comment. So that's like her suicide note. It's just a no comment.
No comment.
You know, but is it a suicide or is it more just like a serial killer murder?
I like to think it's suicide because like
oh, with that's their whole premise. Yeah,
with the theme, yeah, like suicide. With the no comment, like
it's like a F you.
Yeah, it's just this nihilistic, like, I did it because I wanted to.
Yeah.
Not because there's any... Yeah. And, I mean, it really feeds back into the, like... I think we were talking earlier. I think the main thrust of this movie, obviously, is puberty and teenage sexuality. And, like, the whole no-comment nihilism thing feeds into the whole death urge and, like, all of the lust and sex that gets tied into, you know, that death urge. You know, orgasms are called the little death in French. Air quotes again. No one else can.
We should
see
make
this.
Like the sound effect.
Wacha!
Yeah. And so yeah, and there's also in that same line of thinking, like a commentary about suicide as kind of being a way out for the absurdity of having to grow up.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing logical about a sexual urge.
No.
There's nothing even very logical about having to experience, like, a change in your body. Like, random hair, having to go through menstruation, yeah, or your voice changing. There's no logical, like, continuity of that from, like, childhood into that stage. And so you're like, nope, this is absurd. This transformation is absurd. Much in the same way that transforming into a werewolf is absurd. Like, this is beyond inconvenient. This is like changing who I am. And now I'm having to deal with this.
Yeah.
In life.
I mean, well, and I like the presentation in this movie of lycanthropy, where like the scratches that Ginger has, the scratches themselves are sprouting hair, where they've knit themselves back together.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Like it again ties into that metaphor of puberty of like hair in strange places, yeah, you know?
They even talk about that during the nurse scene.
Yeah.
Where Bridget's like, oh, what about her hair in really strange places?
She's like, that's
normal. And then Ginger like gives her like the death look. She's like, no, shut up. And so I can tell you, you know, anyone who has...
The tail is interesting as a human.
The tail is interesting and weird and also phallic, of course. I feel like there's a lot of like phallic symbolism there.
There is. Like it, I don't know if... Like, because again, I think we were talking before we started recording about this, but like the only pieces that are left on humans, at least as far as we know in this movie, are genitals. Like Ginger's wolf form has breasts on it. There's a reference to the one that gets hit having a penis, like
circumcised penis,
specifically a circumcised penis.
Yeah, what was that? Delicious quote there.
Yeah, the guy who hits him is like, oh, was that lycanthropy? And she's like, yeah. And, you know, she's kind of agreeing with him. And he's like, because that would explain the circumcised dick. Exactly what he says.
Well, like, it's interesting that that's the one piece of humanity that's left behind. Like, everything else is primal. And so, like, the genitals being left behind is, to me, is an implication that that's the one thing that's always the same between humans and people. Like, I don't know. It's a really interesting way to characterize a werewolf, and it's not necessarily... I wouldn't call it a werewolf because she doesn't transform back into a human.
Yeah.
Like, she just devolves into this animal.
Yeah. It's like a permanent transformation.
Yeah. Which, again, goes back into puberty and burgeoning sexuality.
Which, it's kind of funny to think about because... You know, the full moon thing doesn't really take any aspect into it. It just ties
to the menstruation, I think.
Yeah, and also like the amount of time it takes to like go through the full transformation.
Sure.
Because she's like, you can see in her calendar where she's marked out. Like, there's this one scene where she's in her bed, Bridget's character, and she's like stuffing a calendar, and she wants to see how far along she is, and so she's like counting the days. And she has the X's marked out as well, which is also something you would do for your menstrual cycle. If you're trying to figure out when it might occur again, you know, and et cetera. So that has like a two kind of a point there. Yeah, I know too much about either side. Even before, you know, I got, you know, involved as a grown up. So, yeah, there's also parallels there again with transformation and So the tail was weird. And it's funny because the first time you see it, it's like this butt shot of Ginger's character. And you're like, well, that is a butt.
That's the nicely shaped butt.
That is a nicely curved butt. And then you just have this tail coming out of it. It's just like, it's just funny, like,
well,
little,
she's,
it wiggles.
She's asleep. And so, like, I'm presumably it's prosthetic. Mm-hmm. And so it's rubbery. Mm-hmm. And so wherever they had it affixed on her tailbone, when Bridget's character pulls her underwear back, mm-hmm. it's just like wiggling, yeah, like it's waving.
It's
at it.
It's so
like,
great.
Oh God.
It's so great.
But by the end of the movie, that tail is really long. It's long enough for Ginger to have pulled it around in front of her and be sawing at it with a knife.
Yeah.
To cut off part of it.
In other words, that's an intense tail.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I really get to see that on the full werewolf or lycanthrope. Like in its full like essence, because they also do a good job with not overusing the like the monster.
Yeah, because there's no CG in this.
Yeah, and depending on how you shoot, like a like when you shoot and what you choose to highlight in an animatronic or like prosthetic kind of deal.
Yeah,
like the kind of lighting you use that can kind of either enhance the effects or kind of detract from what you're trying to do. Because if it's just like on the whole time, then it's just like, it, you know, your eye gets too accustomed to it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the same kind of shock value. Because the first time we get to see it like really in a lot of detail, other than that funny ass blurry Polaroid they take, which is just like so hilarious.
Well, it's because she smacked it in the face with the camera.
Yeah,
like
and
that's
so it's like it just makes sense there, and that's part of the humor of the movie too.
Yeah, I do love the humor in this movie. Anyway, sorry.
No, and the first time we get to see it is like right at the end, that blood lapping scene, and so that the full like force of the creature's on display. It's still kind of like a dimly lit hallway, and then she's like looking at it and like moves, and it looks at her, and so a lot of the time where it does like its carnage and its destruction, you don't even get to really see it. You know, it just like takes you because it's just so quick. Yeah. And, you know, that's, I wish more horror movies would kind of just do that. And not all horror movies are going to be made by like auteur filmmakers with like grand visions. You know, a lot of them are just like, I want to make a movie. What's easy to do? Let's do some jump scares, get a couple of our friends together. And there's fun in that too. You know?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's how you end up with Mono's Hands of Fate.
Yeah. There's fun in that too, but when you're trying to make like an actual serious horror movie, there's so much you can do with it.
Yeah.
You know, something like Babadook compared to this. But different kind of horror movie. Still kind of sort of the same genre. Not like of monsters, but mostly just like of serious horror, I guess I would say.
Adulting things kind of writ large in a horror format. Yeah. But yeah, no, like I really like the humor in this movie. Like the, when they find the, what is it? Monk's hood.
Mm-hmm.
And she tries it out on the guy that, Ginger has sex with and passes it on to, which lycanthropy being spread through unprotected sex reminded me a lot of a graphic novel, called Black Hole, which if you've never read is really, really fucking cool. Anyway, the humor part, like she stabs this guy in the neck and it obviously cures him or at least staves off the infection. And he's just kind of like dazed. And his what is his response?
He says, it's like, right here is, I have to go.
I have to go. I have a class. Still with just this hypodermic in his neck.
Needles just like
sticking
out of his neck. And he's just like, yeah, dude, that's totally cool. That nobody's going to think that's weird at all. And there's great lines like Ginger's character is kind of hesitant to say that what happened was she got attacked by a werewolf or a lycanthrope. And she's like, you know, it's just hormones and stuff. You know, it's like the nurse said, my doctor's changing. And Bridget's character is just not having it. She's like, so you got bit by a great big hormone? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
It's so great.
I can't have a hairy chest, B.
Yeah, she calls Bridget B. So yeah. It's pretty great. And the truck that the guy who sells weed in the movie I was looking at, it's this big yellow truck, and I think on the side it said Country Regreening Program, which is just kind of funny because he's the guy selling the green. Yeah, I was trying to look for little things here and there. And
so what was with him was, like, did he own that business where, like, because he lived in his greenhouse?
Yeah.
Right? Like, was that a government service or was he just like a landscaper?
Yeah, I think he does like landscape stuff. Okay. Initially, before he even set up like that first half of the greenhouse, you see like plants and stuff in there.
Yeah.
Not like the weed plants. Those are like in the second section. That's a little off. So that whole like plant service stuff is kind of like a front for his other business.
For his, yeah.
His side green growing business. And then he holds like a dance in his greenhouse, which is just odd, but you see the decorations beforehand.
Yeah.
Like he's got all the pumpkins and the haystacks and stuff. And this guy is just all about the hustle.
Yeah.
Like he's the kind of guy who he'll be like 50 and he'll still be like doing his thing. And he'll be like, man, what are you doing with your life? And he's like, I got money saved for retirement like 20 years out now. He's like, I'm good. Like I'm making money.
It's what I like about high school girls. I get older and they stay the same.
Oh man.
That's a Matthew McConaughey line from Dazed and Confused. I did not just make a
That was from his own life experience. That's what he says as we're driving around. And so yeah, the guy, the weed selling guy, he's actually not the biggest skeez ball. They kind of try to set him up like that. At least Ginger does as a character, but
right.
You know, he's not really into that.
Well, when the story follows Bridget more and more, like you see, he's just a guy. Like he's just interested in this weirdness that's going on.
Yeah. He's like, I thought it was a werewolf. Like I'm totally down to help you out.
Yeah.
And then he knows like, hey, this is actually for your sister. It's not really for you.
Well, and I also like, because he's the drug dealer, like they rely on him to do the science-y like measuring bits, mm-hmm. which he kind of takes on that role well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It kind of reminded me of like, have you ever seen Brick?
No.
So it's a Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie, which it takes place in a high school, but it's framed as a film noir.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have these archetypes like the femme fatale and the private detective.
Well, that's weird.
The private detective that gets fucked up and he has to solve this case of who died because of this seedy drug deal and blah, blah, blah.
So this
blah,
is
blah,
like
blah.
A high school? Like,
but it's set in a high school.
Wow.
But the characters are talking as if they're in the 1950s, like post-war.
When was this movie made?
I was in college, so 2004.
Okay, this was a while ago for Levitt then.
Yeah, yeah, it was right after Third Rock. Like
really?
He was, yeah.
That's funny. I gotta see that.
Anyway, but yeah, no, it reminded me of that, like taking types of characters and reframing them from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. Like it's, I liked his character. I thought he was fine. It's a shame that he dies.
Yeah. Another introduction of kind of a short-lived character we saw in, because we watched, I showed Zach here, like the first 10, 15 minutes of Gingersnaps 2, which I think is a pretty solid film. I enjoyed a lot. And you have that one guy who plays the librarian initially.
Yeah.
Who gets like eaten up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in a lot of different movies.
Sure.
But he's in another movie called Rampage. Have you seen that movie before?
Oh, is that the Uwe Boll
yes.
Movie where yeah, I've seen that.
What did you think of that movie? Let's not digress too far on that, but that is a disturbing movie.
It is, but it's also just, I mean, it's just a flight of fancy of like, I don't like the system. Let's go fuck shit up. Like, you know, like.
It is, but how it's initially like, if you don't go into it with that knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, because I didn't know what kind of movie it was. So I just sat down, started watching it. It sort of unfolds and then it kind of tricks you in that the main protagonist is like this monster.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you get to watch him and see like why he did this certain things,
sure,
and how he's so methodical and meticulous about it. And I think the movie really fails like right at the end where he's doing like his little like speech and stuff, whatever, about his setup. But I think up until then, like if you just cut it like right before then, before it goes into like
crazy pants land,
yeah, this, you know, diatribe about society and stuff, whatever, then it would just be like you watching someone like that kind of in motion. and like just watching that whole thing just move along. Because there is moments in there where he's just like, oh, like the second where he steps out of the salon, I think it is.
Okay.
It was salon. There's a bunch of women there. And I think it's a salon. And he doesn't want to shoot them because there's like somebody that he knows.
Yeah.
And stuff. And so he leaves because they're like going crazy. And then they're like, oh, they're so like relieved and stuff. And he's like, this is not my mission. This is not what I'm supposed to do. And then he goes back and he just murders them all.
Yeah.
And so it's a disturbing film to watch.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a disturbing film. I mean, there's other movies that I would rather watch, I think, than that movie. Plus, it's Uwe Boll. I really don't like his style.
I don't even really know what his style is. I haven't seen a lot of his stuff. I've seen that.
I saw House of the Dead when it came out in theaters.
No, I have not seen that. No. So
anyway, sorry, we got sidetracked.
Yeah, that's fine. And good movie. We watched a little bit of the second one. I'll have Zach finish the rest of the second one. Maybe we'll do like a little addendum. Just talk about what he thought about it.
An incontinuance.
It's different. It's I don't even know why they went for the third movie.
Yeah, what is the plot of the third movie? Because like from what I can tell, like you showed me the first 10-15 minutes of that. It seems like Ginger Snaps 2 is even better.
It's good. It's not bad at all. It's a good movie.
And I like it follows, seems to be following a motif of first one's about teenage sexuality. Second one's about teenage drug use. I'm curious to see how the rest of the movie turns out.
Yeah.
But the third one, they go back in time, don't they?
It's not even them. Like, I think they might still have the same names. But it's supposed to be like an ancestral version of them. So it's like how...
Is it the same actors?
Yeah, it's the same actors. So it's kind of... I would think of it as like an alternate universe version. Set it within that time period.
Sure.
And they still have to deal with lycanthropy like at its start, at its beginning. And I don't know who was in charge of it as far as direction or production, but it just fell. It just fell flat.
Yeah.
I would have invested like a good bit in that movie, like watching it. I think I stopped like 30 minutes in because I was just like, this doesn't make any sense. And maybe I'll watch it again, you know,
just to see
maybe if my perspective has changed. Maybe I was just like too stuck in because it is such a period change and a shift change. Maybe I was just too stuck in previous, but I don't think that was the issue. I think it just didn't come together. But the second one comes together and it just bookends the whole thing. It's satisfying. So yeah, definitely watch it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check it out.
So I think I don't really have anything else.
Okay. Yeah, no, I didn't either. This is a really, really good horror movie. I put it in a box of movies that I'm sending to my brother because he has run out of watching all the things that he cares about. So he's like, send me new stuff. Send me stuff. So I'm just sending him my copy of the DVD to check out because I don't see myself rewatching it. It's not very rewatchable.
Only after you've forgotten it, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. That's
after
true.
You forget a good portion of it, you can come rewatch it again.
Yeah, but no, it's entertaining. There's a lot of black humor in it. There's a lot of good horror scenes, I guess. Lots of good special effects. Yeah. I think the writing is really tight. Like it seemed like the characters were speaking naturally. Like I never found myself going, I don't think someone would actually say that.
Yeah.
Like I do with a lot of movies. I like how the dad had like two lines in it.
The dad was just such a dick.
He was just a guy stuck in a house of three women, one of which was just going through her first menstruation. So like he just like sits back and he's just like, okay, sure, go ahead.
Can we mention the mom here? Because the mom is a fucking trooper.
She's super weird.
But she's awesome, though, at the end. Because she's like, yeah, I totally discovered the body that you guys buried, but no one's going to lock away my sweetheart, my daughter.
She's super weird. Yeah, before we end, let's talk about her a little bit. Because let's look at her from a human condition.
I mean, I feel like I could diagnose her pretty quick and that she's just living with this distant dude, and they talk about having to go to like counseling.
Yeah, they do mention that early in the movie.
And he's just like, he's not even hooked into like this household. Like, he's the kind of guy that I don't understand, where they just, yeah, they come into their family unit and they're checked out before they even get there.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even engaged with anything that's going on.
Yeah.
Like, they might as well be dead for as much of a part they play, yeah, in the household. And so then the mom, she has to come in and like support everything and like try to keep stuff together. And she kind of has to like present, to me, it's like she's trying to be like positive and she's trying to like keep the house moving. Because otherwise, you know, there's just nothing there.
She is. She's also got lots of baked desserts in every shot she's in, yeah, which I had to stop for a second because my, like, I had the headphones on when my wife was doing her yoga workouts and stuff. And so I like paused the movie and I'm like, this lady, her daughter is having her first period. And to celebrate, I understand she's bringing her favorite dessert, but she comes out with strawberry shortcake.
Yeah.
It's like, so why not just bring out like red velvet cake and be like, your uterus lining is being shed. Eat this red stuff. You know, no,
she'd like cut it and the strawberry jam would come out.
Yeah.
It'd be so great.
But so with this mom, the husband the dad finds the two fingers that Bridget snaps off of that girl in the freezer. Mm-hmm. And she's like, she just plays it off like, oh, this is part of the girl's death thing or whatever. She packs it away in Tupperware, careful to burp the Tupperware, mm-hmm, I noticed. And then she tells Bridget, I found the body, like you said. We'll wait for your dad to be out of the house, and then we'll just torch the house, and mm-hmm, we'll go on the run. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Who, like, really? Like, I don't know very many parents that would actually do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see that she's committed to her kids, and I think her daughters, the way I see it set up is that they begrudgingly know that mom is, like,
kooky.
Like, kooky, but on their side.
Yeah.
Like, she's definitely on their side. Like, she wishes her daughters were, like, more well-adjusted.
Yeah.
But she's willing to engage. Like, however she can engage with their kids, like, that's how she's going to do it.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot of parents in passing, like, after seeing her her kids do, like, a photo shoot video performance of, like, all the different ways of suiciding, would just be like, yeah, that's just what you're doing. You're just weird. And then she makes a mention in the car, too, like, not in the car, I think when she's talking to her mom after they hid the body of that one girl,
yeah,
that they killed that's frozen up. And she's like, yeah, you know, we just really appreciated, you know, how you kind of just let us figure stuff out. You know, we've always, you know, Ginger really likes that. And she's like, her mom's like, oh, you know, I really thought, you know, I was hoping that was going to work out, you know, for the best, kind of figuring stuff out. And so, you know, the mom I see is just like wants to help, wants to to like help these girls figure it out. Their father's just kind of absent. He's just kind of there. Yeah. And then the mom at the end, she's just like, yeah, we'll just leave this guy who's like your dad. I mean, cause like she said, he's just going to blame me for it anyways.
Yeah.
Just like everybody else. And so we'll go and we'll take you out. Yeah. We'll take you and your sister and we'll just leave. We'll just leave the bullshit. Like this whole house, this whole thing that we built up.
Yeah.
Like what she's saying there, at least for me reading into it, hashtag way too much.
Yeah.
Is she's like, this stuff, like I, you know, I kept up this artifice, this whole like thing. I don't give a shit about any of that.
Yeah.
I just love you guys. And like, I'm just willing to throw that all away just to like keep you guys, you know, safe.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So the mom for me was a real trooper. She's crazy, but I mean, her daughters are crazy too.
Yeah. Her daughters are weird. Like I can see them having a weird parent. but yeah, no, I recommend this movie.
Yeah, good stuff.
And, thumbs up. Oh.
Thumbs way up. Way up into the gooey places.
Yeah.
And watch the second one. If you like the first one, give a second one to watch. Different movie. Still enjoyable.
Yeah.
A lot of Emily Perkins. You get some underboob during the shaving scene. Just saying, you're into underboob.
Because that's what matters. Not the good writing.
Yeah. Underboob. Duh. And the sound effects and the music in the second movie are good. I don't know if it's the same
Foley guy.
The same guy like doing the music and the sound effects and et cetera. like the little music segments, like in the beginning of the second one, it's like real electronic.
Yeah.
It's like, pshaw, pshaw. And,
oh yeah, the music in that opening is really, really good.
And you get that in several parts of the second movie.
Yeah.
Like the music is just like industrial, kind of like atmospheric.
Sure.
Especially like to accent some scenes. It's effective. I like it.
Okay.
So,
well, yeah, I look forward to watching it. And, I think next week we're talking about zombies, right?
Yeah, man, so much research for that.
It's like your entire life has been spent preparing you for this one.
Seriously, it has. Yeah, so we'll have, I'm going to try to, delve a little bit deeper into zombies other than like the gore and, hey, wasn't that scene of that thing's head being blown off super cool? Because for me, honestly, that's not really what zombies are about.
No.
That's kind of, that is like separate in the horror genre. Like if you're looking for some schlocky, if you're looking for like blood and guts and gore,
yeah.
Zombie movies can offer that to you. I'm more interested in like what it does narrative wise and kind of how that sets it up. Because it's, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. You know, more than just like dystopian and the zombies are just monsters, which I think if you just set it up like that, like I feel like some of the seasons of Walking Dead do, you fall flat narrative wise because you don't have anything to work with.
Right. Like zombies are much better. Well, we'll get into that next week.
Yeah, we'll jump in.
But yeah, send us mail, send us comments, backrowsupershow@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back for Brains next week.
Send more Brains, please.
Brains.
Bye.
Bye.
Just do it.